What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go! Yeah!
You're listening to the best of the Patriots. A weekly mix of WEEI's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Well, we are at Gillette Stadium. It is a Tie Tuesday. Ty Law coming up in just about 20 minutes at 9 with his thoughts on Mike Vrabel. And I'm curious about your thoughts. I was accused in the Twitch chat of slobbering all over him. How can you not?
I mean, the guy is a specimen. Good luck.
First and foremost, I and no disrespect to anybody else, but... There was more football and more strategy and more knowledge that was just shed in that 25 minutes with Mike Vrabel than we've heard in a long time. So I how can you not be excited about the potential for that guy to lead you where you need to be?
Yeah, I told you I'm on board. I mean, I played with him. That's what made him such a great player. He was a smart football player. Knew everything about football, knew, you know, defense, offense, the ins and outs. So that's going to – and then it's just the way his personality is.
Yeah, I mean, do you think the bicycles are going to be gone from the locker room? Or, I mean, I feel like he may get rid of the bikes.
I think the bikes may be gone. It was so great how much of a plan it seems like he has, but he's not rushing into any major decisions. Mm-hmm. Like, I will say Elliot Wolf's name came up quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so it seems like those two are going to work together.
I think until they don't. I think that as long as he's employed by the team, he will continue to refer to him as an important decision maker. And then it wouldn't shock me if, you know, President's Day weekend, there is a report that Elliot Wolf is reassigned or joining another organization. Like, my biggest takeaway was... Everything felt like it was a steady hand. It was like hearing the captain get over the intercom when you're in some turbulence and the guy sounds like he's done this a million times.
Yeah.
He's like, it'll be over in a couple minutes, and everybody just takes a deep breath.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like we're at 30,000 feet. We were doing a bit of a free fall. We finally staged. We got, you know, back over to our cruising altitude, and the guy in charge knows what he's doing. He's got a strong, deep convictions about what it takes to be a good football player. And his reaction was great when you said, Greg, you said, you know, well, you're accused of being a running guy. It's like, yeah, the best player on our team was a running back.
Right.
And right. It's the thing that he sees, the first thing he saw is the same thing we saw. This offensive line is not an NFL offensive line. That if you had to pick one part of this roster, one team-building element of this team, that was totally the reason for this failed season, it was the offensive line. And he knows better than anybody what that can do for you. He just seems like he's got an understanding. And listen, I don't know. Who knows what they're going to do? I don't know if he's going to be successful. We all know I took my pants off and ran around after Gerard Mayo beat the Bengals. I will just say, if Patriot fans that are in their 40s like I am, he hits all the right notes. You respect him and you trust him.
I think from listening to him, because we always talk about Elliot Wolf, I think maybe... The message was laid down that to Elliot Wolf, like, okay, if you want to be here and you want to be part of this thing, then you need to fall in line. And that to me, and him still saying, okay, we're going to work together, but at the end of the day, in all of sports and dealing with alpha men who have egos, there's only can be one lead dog. And it Mike Vrabel is the type of guy that he imposes that. He's proven he could do that as a player and as a coach in the sense of getting a team to the AFC Championship, having success with a football team in the Tennessee Titans. So I think what the message was,
yeah,
that, hey, like, you want to be part of this, but when it all comes down to it and there's an executive decision to be made, there can only be one top dog.
He's also not the kind of guy that you get a lot of excuses and a lot of finger pointing from.
Nope, no.
I mean, you know, when talking about Tennessee, he suggested that he was out of Tennessee because they didn't win enough football games.
Yep.
It's easier to go in another direction and whatever. But I just think he is incredibly driven. He's going to hold everybody accountable. He talked about guys who are not on board and those guys being gone and the fact that he really doesn't have any need to talk to them after they demonstrate that they're not a part of what's going on. So I just, like, listen, we got to get back to at least 500, and I think he's the man to lead us there. Promised land. I see the promised land in the future.
Yeah, accountability. That's all we need right now, and that's what he's going to bring us. Yeah.
But it is because, and I don't care what people say, because you hear him talk, and it is that it's the Bill Belichick culture that he learned, and he's different than Bill, but at the core of it, it's Bill's always, you don't put yourself above the team. You do your job. You make sure you know what you're doing. You're in your playbook. Like, all of the things that Bill preached to us as players, even though we might not be Bill Belichick coaching tree disciples, it's all, the core was embedded on what Vrabel is now, and his personality comes off different. He's more like, and I agree with Teddy, his personality is more along the lines of Bill Parcells than Bill Belichick. But at the end of the day, the core values that are embedded in him as a coach are what we know and came to love about Belichick.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Anyway, Vrabel went on and on about the run game. He talked about it at length. I mean, it was really a topic that there's a couple other ones that he hit on a lot, too.
That
but he talked
you,
a
right?
lot about the run game, talked about how when you have to pass too much, that's not a good thing. Unless you have Tom Brady or a good quarterback or not Ryan Tannehill or Will Levis or the last two QBs that he had. So I can understand why he thinks that, why he says things like that based on the QBs he's had in the past. But we're to believe now that we have the guy, right? We have the guy. Are you uncomfortable with Drake May throwing the ball 40, 45 times?
To these receivers behind this line, yes. I think they are not built to throw the ball that much. Now, I don't believe that's a problem. If you give him the weapons and he evolves the way I think he's going to evolve, I think throwing the ball 40 times, maybe that's a little strong, but 35 times a game? What's 40 times a game? I need to...
Drake May had one game where he threw the ball over 40 times. And that was the Tennessee game that went into overtime. Other than that, he threw it 37 times against Jacksonville, 33 against Houston, 39 against the Rams, 37 against the Dolphins, 36 against Buffalo. And other than that, it was all 30 and below.
Yeah, I'm fine with the mid-30s. To me, if you start throwing it that much, either you're having a great day, to get up in the 40s, 45, or you're chasing. Mm. And I don't really want to be chasing. I don't want to be in comeback mode, so I got to fling it all over the field.
The Patriots are probably going to be chasing a little bit, I'm just telling you.
They probably are.
And even
maybe
so,
not.
He wasn't throwing that much. Like, he wasn't out there like Bledsoe launching it 50 times, you know? Like,
well, that was Joe Milton in the finale that was
right,
launching him all over the field.
That's true. But yeah, he didn't sit, like, May, as much as he threw, like, you know, he was out there throwing, and they were behind a lot, and they had to try and pass their way back into it. But he handed off a lot in those situations too, whether that was the play call or something. Yeah, I mean, that was it wasn't always how much he threw didn't always match with what the situation called for.
This is where I think there's a blend of, did he run the ball because he had Henry? Obviously.
Sure.
Did he run the ball because he thinks running the ball is good? I think he does.
Yeah.
Like, I think he has some of the, this is where that old school, new school, you know, when you throw the ball, three things can happen and two of them are bad kind of mentality.
Right.
And Rex Ryan, who fancies himself still in NFL circles, he thinks he might get the he thought if you got 30 carries, you won.
Right.
30 rushes, you won. To which I always said, well, just run it 30 straight times.
Yeah. Start the game.
Even if you go three and out 10 times, you'll win because you have 30 rushes.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't work that way.
That's, oh, it doesn't? It's not how bulletproof.
Not how any of this works. But I do think if you got him on the truth serum that we never got a chance to use on Bill Belichick and we now want to use on him, would he prefer to run the ball? I think he'd prefer to run the ball.
I think so, too. And
I'm not saying that's wrong.
Unfortunately, this team does not do that very well.
It doesn't.
And is not equipped to do that very
well. And one of the guys who runs the ball also drops the ball.
Right.
Too often. But this is where we get back to.
You think he's going to bench Stevenson and then bring him back in the day of the game? Like,
no.
Probably
no.
not.
Oh,
you
no.
get benched with Vrabel, I think you stay on the bench.
And if you end up in his doghouse, his real doghouse, I think you're out. I think you're out of, you're gone. I think he blackballs people like Brady used to. Like, when you're dead to him, you are dead to him. I'm going to give you a couple chances. I'm going to give you everything you need to do what I ask you to do. And if you don't do it, I'll find somebody who'll do it.
You don't catch that ball, Aaron Dobson, you're not getting it again.
You're out.
Yeah.
But getting back to the run game, just because you run the ball doesn't mean you have to be this boring, archaic, run-first team.
Sure.
I always go back to Dolphins run the ball.
Yeah.
49ers run the ball. Some of these
the Lions
teams,
run the ball.
Like, yeah.
The Lions are exciting as hell running the ball.
So,
yeah.
Like, don't confuse running the ball with boring old school 1972 offense or something.
Right. It's not student body left. It's,
right.
You know, right.
It's creative runs. And sometimes it's runs that are jet sweeps. It's end around. Mm-hmm. Like, it's different. You know, look at the Debo role in San Francisco. So there's some of that.
Not the greatest example this year, but
no,
yeah.
I know, but there's different ways. Although he did say he's bringing the fullback back.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as I want to say, doesn't mean they're going to line up in the eye and pound it. He might line up in the eye and pound it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe if that's the type of run game he's looking to do. And again, you know, you're talking about basics. This is a team that needs to get back to the basics before they can sort of build off of what and become what they want to be. Like, they're so far behind. They're so underwater that you need to drag them up to being able to run the ball with a fullback, you know, just slant that type
simple.
Of thing. You need to be able to do that effectively. They can't do that. They haven't been able to. And Stevenson, I thought, was maybe a better running back than he looked like this year, but I didn't have high hopes for him. And I thought that if they were going to go out there and make a big splash in free agency this past year, there were running backs that could have gone out and had. And they said, no, we're good with Stevenson. We'll bring in Gibson. He'll be the second guy. And Hasty will be in the mix, too, and some of these other people. And without an offensive line, Ramondre Stevenson's pretty ordinary. Most guys are going to be pretty ordinary, and that, I think, is a big issue in all of this. He wants to rebuild that offensive line. You think, oh, okay, good. You want to protect Drake May. I don't think that's why he's so gung-ho about it. He wants to get back to a grinded-out sort of run situation.
Well, I also think some of it is, so he said, our best player was Derrick Henry. That was the reasoning behind that.
Mm-hmm.
I think you might need to steal a term from the Matt Patricia era, reverse engineer this. What are they worst at? Pass protection and pass catching.
Yeah.
So we might have to run the ball just because.
They're bad at run blocking, too, though.
Oh, they're bad at everything.
Yeah.
They're a bad football team.
I don't know if I'd say they were worse at catching the ball and run blocking. I mean, I think they were. I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, everything was very bad.
Very bad.
Everything was, like, bottom of the league.
But I'm just wondering if that might be his.
Except, like, tight end play, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
But his first step might be avoiding doing what we do the worst, not necessarily just building on our strengths, because. He was quite honest the other day. The first thing I want to do is take advantage of mistakes by others. I'm not sure we're good enough to do that yet. Like, he was very open-minded that he thinks very little of this roster.
Yeah.
He thinks very little of this team. I don't think he said that. I think Robert kind of said that. I was amazed at how much he knew and blah. I think that was him telling Robert where you suck and why you suck.
Can read the standings, right?
I mean, right.
It's pretty obvious. And that's part of this. I mean, that's another aspect of this is when Robert Kraft says, you know, I'm really impressed with the familiarity he has with the team. That, to me, doesn't fill me up with much optimism. It's like, well, yeah, everyone's familiar with how bad you are. Like, I'm not impressed with the way this team operates or anything about that. I'd rather someone come in here and tear it all down and bring in their own system and to hell with the way things used to be, and being familiar with this team. I don't want to be any more familiar with this team ever again. I don't want to be familiar with this team. I want this team to fade into memory, and I want to forget all about them like Rod Rust team. Like, that's sort of what I want here. I don't want to be familiar with these guys anymore.
That's another exercise for later in the week. It may not be exciting because the people on Twitch, Boston commenter says we did boring radio multiple ways talking about the talent. Whatever. Anyway.
I thought it was very exciting.
I thought it was good. Mm-hmm. I don't know about exciting. Sometimes when you talk sports, I feel like you talk some of the basic stuff. It's not all salacious money, sex, murder, or like whatever.
Right.
We fixated on who they have that are like tent pole players and foundational players. How many people you think will be on the roster from last year into next year? Like, don't you feel like half the roster's gone?
No, I don't think so. I don't think you're going to be able to kick half the roster out of here. You got to put someone on the field.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to procure talent.
Sure, but, you know, like, you can only draft so many players. They're only going to sign so many free agents.
Yeah.
You're going to have to bring a lot of this roster back.
I'm going to say half the roster gone. I'm going to say he is just going
to... I mean, listen, I hope you're right.
Big old axe and just start chopping things off. And some of that will be talent. Some of it will be attitude. Some of it will be... I mean, let's just look at the offensive line. You could very well just hatchet away like five guys.
You could do the offensive line like that, yeah.
How about wide receiver?
So. Most of those guys are... Well, some of these wide receivers you have a commitment to.
Yeah. I'm going to uncommit. It's called the NFL. Contract's not worth the paper it's written
sure.
on.
And
did you get
a lot of
signing bonus? No, you're out.
They have a lot of wide receivers, too.
Yes.
I mean, they have so many that you could mix and match some of them.
Then,
but I don't think you're going to get rid of all of them.
No, not all of them.
Okay.
But I think you're going to see, I think 50% turnover is in play, and we're going to be talking about free agents brought in, and we're going to be talking about a large draft class. We'll probably be talking about rookie free agents, tryhards, trying to change the culture.
That's what this team needs, more rookie free agents.
They need tryhards.
I guess, yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of practice squad sort of undrafted, unsigned people floating around here
now.
No,
I know.
So, I don't know.
Wait a minute. An undrafted rookie was a great thing for Bill. Remember, it was a 17-year streak or something.
It was, when he had Hall of
Randall
Famers.
Randall Gay and
Hall
Mike
of Famers
Wright.
All around him. I mean, that certainly helped. You don't have that now.
No, you don't.
Know? So, that would be a nice thing to supplement your Hall of Famers with. Right now, you got to get the Hall of Famers.
You have two.
You got one.
I don't even know if you have any. I was going to say, you said that like it was a fact. I was being like a jackass, and you're like, you got one.
Athlete's name Christian, I root for. Christian Gonzalez, Hall of Famer.
You only like Christians? Seems a little close-minded.
I don't only like Christians.
Seems like,
but I root for athletes named Christian, except Fourier. 617-779.
He's a buff.
7937 is the phone number. Tom is in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. Listen, you can debate the positions of what's most important all day long, right? But I think at the end of the day, it depends on where the team's at. And really, this team needs a foundation on the offensive line. You can take a great offensive line and make an okay quarterback, a good quarterback, but you can't, you know, you can take a great quarterback and make an okay offensive line better. But right now, we need to focus on the offensive line 1A, defensive line 1B. I mean, really, this team's been going downhill since Garnecchia left, right? So.
Yep.
More importantly, maybe we need a better offensive line coach that can protect the quarterback, open up holes for the run, and then that allows those okay wide receivers to actually break open and have some time to get some space.
Thanks for the call. I mean,
you need a better offensive line talent. You need a better offensive line coach. I disagree with his philosophical point. I think we've seen it, and I've said this 1,000 times. People bitched about Joe Burrow's offensive line when he lost the Super Bowl. People bitched about Patrick Mahomes' offensive line when he lost the Super Bowl. They were in the Super Bowl. A true franchise quarterback. Now, they had weapons and other stuff that is also absent here.
Mm-hmm.
But a great quarterback can overcome an offensive line at times. It's happened a lot historically. Now, I think last year's was so bad. You didn't have NFL talent. That wasn't a bad offensive line. That was a non-NFL offensive line.
Yeah, on Wenyu and a bunch of guys who were,
you know, that
practice squatters.
I don't
and
know.
He didn't have a good year either. Yeah.
I don't know who the best pass rushers or D-lines are in college football, but that line was so bad, that old argument, if you took the best in college football and played this team, I think if you took the best defensive line in college football and put them up against this Patriots offensive line, you might have problems.
Yeah.
And you should, that should not be an issue. You should be pro versus college. And these guys are borderline pros.
Yeah.
I'm sounding very disrespectful, but I'm just observing the actual facts on the field.
No, these are facts. I mean, you're not, I don't think you're saying anything that's wrong or that is untoward.
They
you
had
know,
a practice like, squad or like preseason offensive line.
Yeah.
That's what they tried to play all year long.
Yeah. Vidarian Lowe and Demontre Jacobs are fringe NFL players.
Journeyman at best.
Yeah. And Ben Brown was the actual practice squad
journeyman.
Guy. Like, you know, you didn't have a lot of options. Layton Robinson was a late round pick and the rookie, and I think he may become something. We'll see. Wallace was hurt, and you didn't really see much of him. And you know, Okorafor played one snap and then was done. And that you
Peace.
Know, he just didn't have anything. It was a total bleep show. It really was on the offensive line, but that wasn't just the offensive line. Like you had no pass rush after the first like 2 weeks of Keon White. That pass rush was about as bad as you could possibly ask for. I don't know that was all because it was players who were fringe NFL players. Like, you still had Anthony Jennings and White and, you know, Barmore. Well, not Barmore, but, you know, Godchow and some of these other
Wise.
Guys in the middle who should have been able to, I think, put more pressure on the quarterback, but they didn't. The wide receiver room.
Everything.
I mean, the wide receiver room was abysmal, and you had a ton of bodies there, and no one emerged. No one could beat out the rest of the bums in that room, and this is what you're stuck with. I mean, this is a major undertaking, is what this is going to be.
And this is why you're making the argument for best player available.
Yeah.
Because they stink everywhere. Other than a quarterback, take it. There's a lot of people now that want the Will Johnson cornerback kid out of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just pair up the cornerbacks. Let's have a great cornerback tandem. I don't rule that out. I don't say that's stupid. If a guy is great and you think he's going to be a great NFL player, draft him. You need blue chippers. I want to feel like I felt when I watched the Eagles. When the Eagles came to Gillette last year, and it's like, Saquon and A.J. Brown and
Devontae Smith.
And defensively, they're loaded, too. Their line is loaded. They get these guys. What's that guy? Maya Alta, whatever. He's like a developmental. I think he might have been a rugby player. Like, they have beastly athletes.
N'Kobe Dean?
No.
Who are you talking about?
The offensive lineman.
Oh, the offensive lineman.
But they also have defensive guys that are great, too.
Yeah, I don't know who you're talking about. But, okay, yeah, they have a lot of good guys.
Maya Alta?
Defense,
I think it's like Maya Alta. But he's really good. My point is, you need some people. You need bus players. You know how they used to say, like, people that get off the bus that would scare the hell out of the other team?
Yeah.
You don't have enough bus players. Keon White is one of our bus players, and he's like, he's a meh player.
Yeah. Well, I see a lot of people on Twitter saying, well, Keon White's really going to like being coached by Mike Vrabel. And I kind of agree with that.
Maybe.
I think that he, you know, like he said, we got to be coached harder. I want to be. But Mac Jones said that, too, and I didn't believe him either. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see if that's actually something that works for a guy like Keon White. But at the very least, you got a pass rusher coming in here now, coaching up a pass rusher who's a lot more hands-on and a lot more of a hard-o, as we said, and sort of is going to get in those guys' faces. I think that that's going to be a big part of this. Like, he's going to, not exactly the way Deion, when he went to Colorado and was like, I'm bringing my luggage, and if you don't want it, you can leave. Like, Vrabel can't do that, but he can do a variation of that, which I think is going to be necessary.
He was very close to saying that with the Greg Hill show today.
Yeah, I heard that. I thought so,
too. There was something where he said, like, and if so, I won't really talk to you and I won't have the time for you because you won't be here long or something. And you're right.
But that, you can't do that for the whole roster.
No, you can't. It's harder to do.
Yeah.
But I think he'll pick his spots. And that's where I go back to, I keep waiting for somebody like to write up a list, a Giardi or somebody, of players that might be Mike Vrabel guys. You know, 4, 5, 6 guys that he could bring in that played for him previously that are his OTIS Smiths, or remember Bobby Hamilton, or these guys that were Parcells and then Belichick culture setters. Anthony Pleasant. Remember when Anthony Pleasant was with Bill in like the Jets, the Browns, the everywhere. Vrabel has to have some of those guys that I feel
Pleasant,
like he's going to.
Hamilton, like guys like that? Yeah.
I feel like Vrabel has to have. He was in Tennessee long enough to have those types of guys. Kevin Byard, maybe.
Yep.
I mean, I'm just throwing a name out there. But like that he expects to not only contribute on the field, but just as importantly, help him set the culture. And when he blackballs somebody, like, be the voice in the locker room that says, the reason that guy's out is because he didn't do X, Y, and Z, and Mike takes those real. You got to have those guys. If you don't have lieutenants in the locker room, you're toast. I think that was the greatest thing Tom Brady ever did. He was Bill Belichick. Maybe not the greatest thing. There's a
no,
lot
he did
of
some other things that were pretty
but
great. But
early on in his career, he was like the locker room lieutenant. He fell in line perfectly with what Belichick wanted to do, and I think that set the tone. Vrabel needs those players in the locker room, and I don't know if you can just turn to, he like I saw him give a big hug to David Andrews at the press conference. I don't know if you can, I don't even know if Andrews will be here very long, a year, maybe two.
Right.
And I don't know if you can build that relationship right away with David Andrews and, you know, returning captains, Hunter Henry. They're good guys. They're good leaders. I think you might need some of your guys to come in with you.
Probably. I wonder who those guys are. I wonder if those guys will be
available. Listening?
I wonder where they're
Friday, where I want a list of Vrabel players that he will bring in to set the culture in Foxborough.
All right. That's
your assignment is there, Giardi, and I know you listen.
Assignment there, Mike.
You're a P1.
He's going to go through a long list of candidates, in part because I'm sure there are a lot of people that he'd like to talk to, in part because those are what the rules stipulate. So you have to, and you don't know what's going to transpire during the course of that process when you're talking to all different candidates. Again, I just say, like, the name had been floated out there. I think it's completely logical. Josh McDaniels is in Foxborough. He's under contract to the Raiders, so the cost is friendly. I think there's some sort of relationship between him and Mike Vrabel. They're familiar with each other's work. That's one that would make sense. Ultimately, I don't know if it'll get done in the end. He's going to have to go through his list of candidates. We'll see what happens. But that to me would be a logical one that would, I think, help the development of Drake May.
I'm not so sure about that last part. I was Adam Schefter yesterday on WEEI Afternoons. It'll help Drake May. Meh. I'm not sold on that. And I'm definitely not sold that's the reason they'd be hiring Josh McDaniels. We got an additional report earlier in the show about Josh McDaniels and what he's been up to. I think you're going to hear that in clip du jour.
Yes. Yeah.
At the end of the program. I don't want to spoil it.
Makes sense to bring that back. You get that kind of intel.
A little bit of a Josh McDaniels scoop here on the program. We've been making Keith has really been making news. And we'll continue to.
And a lot of enemies.
Yeah, well, that's true.
People hate it, Jones.
And then there's a your own list. You are making enemies from their view, but also now you've created some enemies or some enemies created themselves on the other side from you as well.
It's been insane. It's been a real whirlwind.
Courtney has a new, or is it old, enemy with her stolen Celsius. We're going to get you the answer to that. Very incriminating footage. We're going to do that coming up.
I mean, this place is,
in the grab
there
bag.
Is security camera everywhere here.
Everywhere.
So you can't just expect to come into this building and get away with anything.
No,
we're
on it. If you think you can grab something out of the community fridge and get away with it.
Good luck.
Good luck. So we'll provide those answers coming up here in the final hour of the program. Josh McDaniels, is the lack of news on Josh McDaniels, forgetting even some of the things Schefter said there. Oh, he's got a good contract. He's still being paid by the Raiders. Like, whoa.
Hang on.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
You're mentioning that before even saying it'd be good for Drake May. You're talking about his contractual status. Wait a minute. And there's also just a complete lack of news on these interviews. I kind of assumed, perhaps mistakenly, but I assumed when Mike Vrabel was on this radio station Tuesday morning with Greg, and he says, yeah, we're going to start the interview process today. We're interviewing people today. And Josh McDaniels is on that list. But we're interviewing people today. We're starting it today. I figured by Tuesday afternoon, we'd be getting the tweets, people with their own graphics, split graphics, whatever. We'd be getting the tweets that the Patriots interviewed offensive candidate or offensive coordinator candidate X. And then yesterday, offensive coordinator Y. And today, we'd be getting more updates. There hasn't been an update yet about who has interviewed, who they're planning on interviewing. They've been doing everything at a breakneck pace, and we have no updates. So, are they putting together a long list, getting their ducks in a row for the first time now that Vrabel's on board? They're taking a breath, and they're going to take their time with this? Or is it an indication that it's a bag job for Josh McDaniels?
Could be a bag job for Josh McDaniels. It could also be they got to get their, you know, Rooney Rule in order, right? Like, as terrible as that is, that might be the reality where they're like, we can't just announce all these interviews and we can't tell everybody that we're interviewing Josh McDaniels and, you know, Dave Ragone and a couple other guys and then hire Josh McDaniels. Well, can't do that. That's not how it works. We got to have fake interviews with Pep Hamilton and Byron Leftwich first, then we can do it.
You could announce your interviews. You couldn't announce hiring McDaniels, but you could announce all your interviews in the meantime.
Well, not all of them, I don't think.
Some of them, and then you could get to, by, you know, Friday, you could get around to any of your candidates to satisfy the Rooney Rule.
Serious question.
It would be bad optically, but you could do it.
Yeah, I mean, the optics have probably maybe been thrown out the window anyway. Do you think that, this is a serious question, they gave a call back to Pep Hamilton and Byron Leftwich and were like, are you guys interested in the offensive coordinator job? Or do you think they know, like, what the hell? Like, does this help us to get our names out, or are we getting viewed as just being used?
I think if they thought they were getting their names out and it was going to be
it's
good,
not
they,
helping.
They certainly learned that the view on it, fair or not, is that they're
back?
Being used.
Did you circle back to
did
that
they?
Interview? Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they did, and I wouldn't be surprised if these two said, yeah, go screw.
Yeah, go
screw. Which is basically what Aaron Glenn told them. Like, don't waste my time with fake interviews.
Right.
So that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Now, is anybody, I don't think, and I certainly didn't get the impression that Josh McDaniels was a bag job like Mike Vrabel was. Schefter yesterday kind of made it sound like it was very likely that they would get McDaniels.
I didn't like the sound of that.
But Vrabel's not a shock at all. Like, them hiring Vrabel, like, we all kind of predicted that. Doesn't mean that was who we all wanted, but that's who we all thought was going to be the guy. But different story when it comes to McDaniels. I thought there was a list of guys. It seemed like, oh, that one's kind of obvious. And, like, some Patriots fans would say, yeah, bring back Josh McDaniels. He was decent with Mac Jones. But I think you can be more creative than that. I think you can go somewhere else. And if you're Mike Vrabel, based on his history, he's okay taking a first-time play caller. He's okay. It doesn't have to be a guy with offensive coordinator experience.
Not only is he okay with it. I think
maybe he's
only
done it.
Pretty much all. Maybe Tim Kelly had called plays in Houston. And then at the end called him again for Vrabel in Tennessee. But I don't think Todd Downing had called plays before. Definitely Arthur Smith and who was this for? Oh,
LaFleur.
Hadn't been offensive coordinators before. So
I got another, and you can say people can change and everything else, and people can point to positives for Josh McDaniels as well as negatives. Let me give you a negative real quick. People seem to gloss over the year that he spent with the Rams.
Yeah.
Because the head coaching disasters were so public and were just like, what a mess, and got fired in season both times. And it was like, that was national attention. When you struggle as an offensive coordinator for the St. Louis Rams, it can get kind of buried. Do you know what those two situations, though, would have in common? If he comes here, it'd be year two of Drake May.
I was going to say it's a young quarterback, right? Because he had Bradford.
How about year two of Sam Bradford?
I did not realize
and
that.
And he made him worse.
Nice.
Sam Bradford was significantly better his rookie year than he was his second year. So I don't know if you want to look at that and you're like, well, that was a long time ago, Keith, and maybe things are different. He was hurt, so he only played in 10 games. But his rookie year, he went 7-9. His second year, he went 1-9. And in 10 games, he threw 6 touchdowns. The year before, he threw 18 touchdowns. And then when McDaniels left, he was good again.
He threw 6 touchdowns.
In 10 games.
Jesus.
Then the next year, he was healthy and he threw 21 touchdowns. So that was another guy, 3 offensive coordinators in 3 years. And the one, and you could point, he was hurt. It's like, yeah, he still played 10 games. The one where he was the worst was the McDaniels.
Well, correct. The real answer is Sam Bradford probably just couldn't play and wasn't very good. He
got injured a lot. I don't know if he was a complete bomb. I think he was okay.
He was the rookie of the year, as you said. Did he ever sneak onto a Pro Bowl team? It doesn't look like it.
No, I don't think so. But he had his moments. Remember when he came back on with Minnesota?
Yeah.
He was decent.
Even if your answer is Sam Bradford blows.
But he took the rookie of the year and he made him horrible.
Well, this is what I was going to say. Look at Bradford's first 3 years. He was the rookie of the year. Yeah. McDaniels made him worse. McDaniels left and he was immediately better again.
Right.
So that is incriminating. It's a great point. I think people glaze over the Cam year here in New England. Like, they just ignore it. Well, he was good with Mac. Yeah, he sucked with Cam. And even, Cam was done. Cam was cooked. Cam couldn't throw. Well, right. Oh, that's right. Why did they sign Cam Newton again? Oh, because he didn't develop Jarrett Stidham?
Because the guy that they thought
was going to take over and the guy they were trying to tell us was going to take over for Brady, Jarrett Stidham, he couldn't develop him. And it was so bad that they had to go out and find a washed Cam Newton. That's also still his fault. So fine, give him Mac Jones. I don't even want to give him the whole year because it fell off so badly in the final 5 games. But whatever, let's give him the Mac year. I'm not giving him the Cam year. And if we're going to go back to Matt Castle or 6 quarters of Jimmy Garoppolo, let's throw the Rams season in his face.
Toss it in there.
So I think McDaniels is overrated, mostly a product of Tom Brady. I think he's toxic. I don't think anybody else would hire him. I don't think he's getting a job, well, certainly as a head coach ever again. I don't think he's getting coordinator jobs. And even coordinator interview. Let me know when he gets an interview. Like, let me, if I'm wrong about it, I'm wrong about it. Let me know when he gets one. Why is that important? Because the only organization that has any interest in him is this one. And the real red flag in what Schefter just said, well, he's cheap, effectively. The Raiders are still paying him. So does Vrabel want him or does Kraft want him?
We know Kraft wants him. Does Vrabel want him? Maybe Vrabel surprises us and does want him. I think it would go against a lot of his previous hires. I don't think that's who he would want. I also don't know if there is an automatic guy that he would get. You know, I don't know. Like, other teams, For like Raheem Morris last year when he went to Atlanta, it seemed like it was a done deal. Zach Robinson made sense. They both left the Rams together. And
a
boom.
Package, basically.
Vrabel was out of football essentially last year. He was a consultant for the Browns. That's why the Tommy Rees name was connected to him. But you're like, do you really want anybody from that Browns team? Like, I don't know. And so Rees gets promoted, so it won't be him. So as you go back to some of his old guys, I mean, two of his other offensive coordinators are in the league right now, either at that position or as a head coach. So he's not going there. So it might be somebody possibly that's worked with him for the first time. Like, I wouldn't even rule that out.
Yeah, so I just wonder again, is it his hire? Is it, as the Twitch chat is describing it, maybe it's break glass in case of emergency.
So my hope. He wanted Tommy Rees of this year.
Some of these other guys he was interested in, but okay, he's your fallback, maybe on Vrabel's list. I don't think he's the first guy on the list. I think Rees was. So was he the first guy on Kraft's list? And if Kraft is going to force an offensive coordinator on him, not the break glass in case of emergency, but Kraft is going to force an OC on him, would he force Elliott Wolf on him? And how much influence does the Kraft family still have over all of this? The McDaniels hire, to me, would open that back up. You know me. I was just feeling better about this yesterday, yeah. Keith. Schefter comes out, Vrabes is the man. Yeah, Vrabes is the man. And Curran said something very similar. Well, is he the man if he can't even hire his own OC? That doesn't sound like he's the man. It sounds like Robert's pulling strings.
See, my hope, kind of looking at this positively, would be Josh McDaniels is the fallback. And they go through the interview process. Maybe Vrabel has a guy in mind, but maybe they can't reach a deal, or maybe the guy that he wants gets promoted by a better team, or what? Maybe even becomes the head coach. Like, who knows? I don't know who he wants, but like, maybe it doesn't work, and then you at least have the fallback, and it'd be a better fallback than last year. All due respect to a friend of the show, Alex Van Pelt, but I mean, guy's been in the league a long, 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 long time, and teams had only asked him to call plays once, and it was forever ago, and so that wasn't the first choice. In fact, if you go in order, I think it was the 12th or 13th interview. So I think this, you don't let it get that far out of control. And you know, if things go sideways, maybe Vrabel's already communicated to Elliott Wolf and the Krafts, all right, here's who I want. And for whatever those circumstances, if you don't get him, it's like, all right, at least we know we can get Josh.
So I don't know, have we asked this before? Van Pelt or McDaniels?
McDaniels. You're close.
It's probably McDaniels, but I would like Van Pelt here. So like,
do you think
would McDaniels come in
job,
and Van Pelt would take the quarterback's coaching job effectively?
See,
is that what you're asking?
Yeah, if I'm Van Pelt,
that's an odd question.
Yeah, I don't think I would tell him to go screw too.
Right, or like if he's going to be a quarterback coach again, go do it somewhere else.
Yeah,
but like I don't want to do it here.
Yeah,
because like remember when I was the offensive coordinator? And like now I'm not. Like that's tough. You know, it's one thing to go from like head coach to D coordinator, like a Vance Joseph, because you have like a different coach in there and all that stuff. That's maybe a little bit different, but for Alex Van Pelt to be like, all right, now we're really pushing you down the pecking order, that's tough.
So does the lack of news on the coordinator search tell us anything? I think it does. And it makes me fearful that McDaniels is the guy, and I don't like it. I don't like it because I don't think he's Vrabel's choice. I think he's Kraft's choice. And that opens up a whole world of questions. 617-779-7937. Never mind. I think McDaniels is overrated, and I don't think anybody else would hire him, and he's been toxic and flamed out elsewhere, and if the best reason to hire him is because he wouldn't leave, I think that's a terrible, terrible, terrible reason, and it's unimaginative, and I don't like it. I don't want Drake May starting over again at square one, relearning the offense in a new offense. I want him to take a step forward, not a step back. So for all those reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Drake May, congratulations on the engagement.
Big
there, Drake.
Big congrats to Drake May. He
Big
is
congrats.
Now an engaged man. Young gun.
Too young.
I'm not going to tell anybody when
gone.
To get married, when not to get married.
Gone too soon. On the open market there, Drake May.
Sorry,
not
ladies.
Not that he ever really were.
Back off, ladies.
But gone too soon. 22?
22.
You got married at what age?
I was young. I was 27. I think I was like almost 28, a few months away from 28, I think.
This is going to shock you. It took me a lot longer to get married, but I was in my 30s. I was 31 when I got married.
That and seems so, like about right.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, actually, I don't even know. There's no right or wrong, right? True love is blind and all that's crap.
22.
22.
If yeah. I had to say,
you're a pro athlete, my dude.
I don't want to rank all the ages for getting married, but 22 yeah. doesn't feel like the greatest one.
Seems
but whatever. The heart,
early.
Keith, the heart wants what the heart wants. These
true.
Two have dated forever.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a red flag, but
you
hey.
See some of these Mormon shows. They're getting married wicked young.
So
18, 19?
That's true.
And then they're doing all kinds of other stuff. Too. That's another. Yeah, we don't have time
not,
for that.
Let's not chase our tails on that
no,
one.
No, but congrats. So Josh Allen, that's like the thing to do now.
Yeah.
What about Travis Kelce? When's he going to pop the question? What's he waiting on?
Great point.
Taylor Swift's like, this little kid's 22 years old. He's getting married.
Oh, my God. Imagine.
Yeah.
I didn't even think
Thanks
about that.
Thanks a lot,
Keith.
Drake May. Travis Kelce. Like, thank you so much, Drake May. That's awesome for doing that. Now, they've been together reportedly forever, though,
that
right?
Stuff does happen when your friend... I guess you were probably on the early side, but like...
Yeah, but some of my idiot friends also got married. Now, they're not all still married, but they were married kind of young, too.
But that is true. The thing. It's like every time a buddy of yours proposes, you're like, come on!
Yeah. I'm like, aren't you happy for him? Katie's like, yeah, I'm real happy
I'm
for
like,
him.
Yeah, like, now I'm like, now I got to deal with this? Like, what do you mean?
Son of a gun.
You proposed.
Yeah.
Hey.
Mm.
Come on.
Don't do that.
But good point.
Yeah.
Travis Kelce's probably catching some heat over this.
Do you look at this?
Oh, did you see that a football player propose? He's only 22. Did you see that?
Can you spin this positively?
I'm having trouble.
All right, how about this?
Yeah, go for it.
To put this as respectfully as possible. Maybe he's not chasing tail all around town now. Maybe he's like focused on football.
Yeah.
He's like, I got my lovely wife at home.
I'm settled
down. We're building
down.
A family.
Yeah.
I don't want to do anything crazy.
Yeah.
I'm not out there, you know, with different ladies all the time.
Yep.
So that's something.
Yeah.
You know, like
that's
that?
Something.
Also a guy who can show commitment.
Sure.
That's something.
Yeah.
Alec Baldwin had a good line in the, remember when he was talking about the importance of being married in The Departed? It's kind of offensive, but he like went through all these reasons why. He's like, yeah, it means that somebody else could stand the sight of you for more than 10 minutes or whatever. He's like, yeah, that's good. It's a good sign.
That's good. That's a plus.
It's a good quality.
Yeah, I don't know. I get
she's
sure.
a doctor.
He's gonna he's gonna be focused.
Yeah.
He's not gonna be out running around town. He's gonna be a little crankier at work, I'd imagine. He's gonna be a little cranky.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That could happen.
That'll happen.
Well, he doesn't have kids yet. He just
no.
But Matt, that's next.
That's what he does.
That's kind of the next thing.
No sleep for that guy.
None.
No.
But congrats though to him. You know, too bad he wasn't there at the Vrabel press conference. He's like, Mike, I've got all this stuff planned. I have flowers on the beach. I can't leave this. We're all dressed up in matching clothes. So I can take a photo.
I am just happy. And trust me, if I felt that way, I would have ripped him for it. I'm happy that we didn't rip him for skipping out of the Vrabel press conference. I am happy about that. We ripped him for not showing up on breakup day.
Yeah.
After the season was over and not talking that day. We didn't rip him for not being there at the Vrabel press conference. And thank God. once we found out what he's going through with. Thank God.
WEEI Afternoons, final hour. Christian Arkin, Andy Hart, nice to have you with us here today on the 15th of January. That was Mike Vrabel talking with Tom E. Curran. And I like that quote. He did mix his metaphors up a little bit at the end there, but I like the quote prior as he talks about blaming me. You know, I'm the guy. I'm going to be in charge here. If you want to blame somebody, you can throw the blame on me. That's quite a bit different from some of the casting of blame that you saw from Gerard Mayo, although I don't remember him saying... talking about accountability. I feel like everybody, Mayo, everybody, when they become a new head coach, talks about accountability and says that they'll be accountable, they'll hold the team accountable and the players accountable and everybody else. And that's basically what Vrabel was saying there.
Yeah.
But I believed him, you know, like I hear that and I believe it. Like he's ready to stand up there and be the guy. And if it doesn't go right, then you can blame him. Now, on the other hand, I do remember Bill Belichick saying that after the very, very smart, intelligent hire of Matt Patricia to be the offensive coordinator. He says, listen, if it doesn't work, you can just blame me for it. I'll accept the blame, which he never did. I don't know. I mean,
you're right.
It's easy to say that here on January 15th,
but you're right in that Vrabel says it more believably, definitively, even almost interjecting into a question to just blame me. Say, you know, or the expectations. I can guarantee you, nobody's got higher expectations than I do.
Right.
That like that mentality. Whereas I may be misremembering this, as Roger Clemens famously said, but. Gerard Mayo got to the point where he was saying, blame me. I'm the head coach. It's my, like, I feel like it didn't have that tone early on because they were so fixated and fascinated with collaboration and bringing everybody's in the same boat and we're all going to row in the same direction. No. Mike Vrabel's, what'd you call him? Who's the person that sits at the front of the boat and tells you what to do?
The coxswain.
The coxswain.
Yes.
Was coxswain?
I mean, that's how it's spelled, but it's pronounced coxswain.
Okay. Yeah. The coxswain, he's the guy that's telling
Mike Vrabel's the coxswain?
Yeah, he tells everybody where
he'd
to row.
He'd flip the boat over if he
and
was the coxswain.
It's a metaphor.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, it's not a literal. But he's the one telling everybody where to row, right? And they all have to be rowing his way, or he has flat out said he's got no use for you.
Right.
In the last couple days, in various interviews, he's flat out said, if you're not, you know, whatever cliche, pulling the rope in the same direction, doing everything, respect-driven, treat the organization well and we'll treat you well. If you're not doing that... He's done with you. You're out.
Yeah.
And I am interested in that. Now, you poo-pooed me
You don't think there's going to be a hatchet job done to the roster the way I do. I think there will be some hatcheting going on.
I think there's going to be some cuts made for sure. I just don't know that the scale that you're talking about, I just don't think is realistic.
50%.
50%, that's a lot. So I mean, it's 26 guys.
27 guys.
You know, and you get seven in the draft, or maybe, you know, let's say eight or nine in the draft.
Boom.
And then you sign 17 guys.
Three undrafted rookies, so that's 10.
Okay.
And then 10 free agents.
10 free agents? I mean, that's a lot of free agents.
And I'm still not to 26.
Yeah, and you still got six more spots to fill. That I know what you're saying, and I do think that they'd have to make big changes here to the roster. It's just when you're this bereft of talent and you have to make so many changes and improve in so many places, one offseason, you can't do it. I mean, you can't replace 26 guys in one offseason.
That was the story of Mike Vrabel's free agent class in 2001. They were the Kmart Blue Light Special free agent class. That's what they were known as. Most people don't know what that is anymore because Kmart doesn't exist. Blue Light right. Specials don't exist. But
the last Kmart was down the Cape, right? Wasn't that like one of the last ones in the country?
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was one down near that, you know, when you come down over the bridge and there's that big intersection, there used to be a Kmart there. But I think it's either long gone or it was the last one or something like that. Anyway.
I believe his class had like 17 guys in it, free agent class, because Belichick needed to turn the roster over from 2000 again into 2001 and start building forward. And there were a lot of lower level guys, cast offs, you know, Roman Pfeiffer, Antoine Smith, all these guys. I think they need to do something similar to that, and it's not going to fast track it. And I think that's why he's lowering the expectations to play tough, take advantage of mistakes, get better as the season goes on, play like some of it, which is Gerard Mayo wanted to do but could never accomplish. And I'm not saying it's easy, but I think they need their culture's not good. And I don't just mean off-field culture. I mean accountability, work ethic, you know, talent is part of culture.
Sure.
I think it's hard to have good culture without good talent.
Yeah, it's hard to have good culture when you suck. You know, I mean, that's part of it, too. But also, it wasn't just so much that they sucked. And I think this is part of what swept Gerard Mayo right out the door, is that their culture by the end of the season was attacking the fans.
Yeah.
Like, that was in the locker room. We're defending our coach, but we're going to attack the fan. Dietrich Wise and Jelani Tavai and these guys are telling the fans to know their role and that they're spoiled and, like, all these other things. Like, when your culture, and I understand wanting to defend your coach. I don't think that's, in and of itself, a bad cultural thing, you know? Like, if you want to defend your coach, you all rally around your coach. Like, that's a good thing for culture, generally. But when it crosses over into telling the fans off and telling the fans you don't know what you're talking about and know your role and shut your mouth and everything else, that's not a culture that you can have anywhere. I mean, that's in pro sports. You can't have that culture on any kind of team.
Well, there's a reason you rarely hear that. I mean, I think it generally goes the other way, where every team pretends they have the best fans and the best crowd.
Right.
You just tell them what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Gave me an idea for odds and ends, Stiz. We could use that old, remember the Cubs manager when they only played day games, who ripped the fans, losers who should get jobs. The only reason they can come to our day games is because they don't have jobs.
Who was that?
One of the great rants in the history of rants, not just baseball, any sport. But there's a reason you remember him, because there's not too many rants that rip the fans, and I believe he was fired shortly thereafter.
Probably, yeah. I sort of remember this, but
it's one of the great rants in the history of sports. Now, it's you got to have a lot of beeps ready. You got to get the safe for work version, safe for radio version.
Yeah.
FCC version.
Bleep those bleeping fans who came out and say they're Cubs fans, but they're supposed to. Yeah, okay.
It's one of the greatest rants in the history of the world. Can I make a request?
If you go like really go for it. And MF
the
go
fan, all in.
Then it can be like funny.
Right.
Then it's like when Bill Burr went on stage in Philly and started ripping all the Philly teams and calling all the people in the stands a bunch of whatever he called them. Like, if you do it and you
commit
do it
to
right,
the bit.
If you commit to it, people respect that. You know, like that's not what happened here.
No, that is not what happened here. And the worst part of it, I still go back to the Tavai thing, is then he kind of tried to do an apology, but didn't really apologize and kind of doubled down on his comments from earlier. We all say dumb things, or we say things we believe in that are dumb to say openly. And then when your boss or your wife or somebody advises you to, hey, how about we clean this up and fix this? He didn't even do that. He didn't even take that opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, Jelani Tavai is a good player. He's a good player. Is it fair to say he's a good player?
Yeah.
Okay. Good player. But is he a guy you'd say, I don't know that we can come back from that. I don't know that he sticks around.
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So
he's not so good that you can tell off the fans and be okay. Yeah,
so
no,
if
he's not
that
one of those
type
guys.
Of guy is gone,
yeah,
they have a chance to get to my 50%, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that.
Now,
I did.
But not all of those 26 were MFing the fans either. I mean, like,
oh, no, some of them just stink.
That'd be a reason to move on from Tavai.
DeMontre Jacobs, Ben Brown, yeah. Verdarian Lowe. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of guys I can get rid of just because they're not good enough. Right? So, like,
sure.
When you marry those up, now you're approaching double digits and then, you know, maybe the 50% thing. The thing I wanted to bring up is the comment yesterday that Mike Vrabel said, or 2 days ago, that Mike Vrabel said to Tom Curran about Elliot Wolf not having the some limitations that prevented him from investing fully in personnel.
Right. Yeah.
Do we want to re-rack that, or we just want to run the response to it?
Do we have that? Do we have that clip?
I can get it. Give me a second. Okay. I got the response.
Go ahead, Stiz. We do have the response, and Curran talked about it on Early Edition last night.
Okay, last night, and Curran did the interview, which I thought was interesting, because I told you.
It was that stand-up interview they had, right? Yeah, okay.
I thought it was the most interesting piece of audio that came out of that day. And I also had no idea what it meant. Literally no idea what it meant.
Right.
And come to find out, when we'll get to this, I think Curran and I were in a similar mindset there.
Okay. I can find the quote if we don't have the sound of it.
No, I got it.
Stiz has it. All right. Let's hear it, Stiz.
How comfortable are you that this group is going to be headed by Elliot to identify good players?
Yeah, very. You know, and I think that, you know, having talked to Elliot, I think that, and getting to know him through the interview process and then, you know, some over the weekend, you know, there were some things that maybe didn't allow him to completely invest in personnel. And I'm not going to be able to watch every player. I'm not going to be able
to
watch.
That's all we need, Sis. So I also found interesting there, Mike Vrabel speaks relatively quickly. Like when he is on point, mm-hmm. he says it quickly, aggressively, definitively. You can't possibly have higher expectations than me.
He's from Ohio, but he's not like a Midwestern pause for the comma type of guy.
Did you notice there was longer pauses between every word?
Definitely.
I don't know if he was like...
He was speaking carefully.
Did I already say something I shouldn't have, or do I really need to tiptoe through this comment? Okay, so he made that comment, which struck me as weird. Now, come to find out, it also struck the person doing the interview as weird, because Tom Curran talked about it on NBC Sports Boston.
I don't know what that is a very... That word invest is carrying a lot. And does he mean invest as we would conventionally think? He wasn't allowed to invest money? Well, then explain the Calvin Ridley pursuit. Explain the pursuit or the re-signing to big money contracts, a number of what we would call basically middling free agents.
Interest in Brandon Ayuk as well.
So is that investing that he wasn't able to do there? Were they not able to invest time?
So no one seems to know what the hell he was talking about.
Well, he's also saying, well, how do you explain Ridley and Ayuk? That didn't happen.
No, but they apparently were willing to invest $90 million.
Sure, but the Red Sox were willing to go so far with Soto, and they didn't get it, and we don't give them that kind of grace, I don't think, and you shouldn't do it with the Patriots either.
Okay, that's one read.
I wouldn't. I mean, you know, like, you can be in on it. You can be talking about it and putting offers out there, but if you know you're getting beat and you don't go the extra mile, then I don't give you credit for that.
Okay, that's one reading
personally,
of it.
Yes, there's.
I had a question. I was thinking of this last night. Now
he raised his hand. I
love it.
Now we've heard Robert.
Yes,
Kraft,
young Stiz.
We've heard Robert Kraft say on multiple occasions he does not limit his coaches on spending, mm-hmm. right? And he said, in fact, just last week, you can go over the cap. All I ask is that we get even within 3 years. Is it possible, and I'm genuinely asking, that maybe a head coach would have like a bonus structure in his contract to where if you don't spend X amount of dollars or you save us X amount of dollars, you get a bonus? Or is that completely stupid?
That's not completely stupid because Belichick got paid and then he paid his assistants, right? Like, wasn't that part of it?
Well, part of that story was like he got a pool of money.
Yeah.
And if you take $25 million for you, well, you only have $10 million left for everyone else or whatever.
Have $25 million, you keep what you want, but you got to pay your own guys out of that.
I'm not sure what you're saying works and or is even legal.
Like managers get bonuses for saving their company.
Not in a collectively bargained world of free agency and salary cap and some of those things. I think you're going into a gray area. I'm not saying it's impossible.
Well, in the CBA, there's incentives in all sorts of players' contracts.
Oh, yeah.
Because I just don't get on how one hand is saying, well, I don't limit my guys. And then you have Vrabel saying, well, Elliot, you know, his hands were tied a little.
And that's where the question. Also, Robert is being a little disingenuous there, I guess. That's how the salary cap works. Like, the salary cap is an accounting measure. If you spend more here, well, it's going to show up over here, right? Like, you kind of put the puzzle together in different ways. So he's, that's where the 2021, it was like, okay, how long are we going to live off 2021 for? We're back in line. We averaged it out. In fact, last year you were well below the cap. You still had plenty of money. So why are you not spending then? Is it to prepare for this year? Maybe. I don't know. But I just find it interesting. Elliot Wolf, and there's also the question that one of the texters brought up that we screwed the pooch on, quite honestly, with Schefter. Uh-huh. When Schefter said there's been no change for Elliot Wolf. No change.
Right.
Well, Mike Vrabel just said Elliot Wolf wasn't allowed to spend money last year, but now Mike Vrabel is the guy who's going to decide who and what they spend money on.
Right.
Because Mike Vrabel's, what did he say? The guy? Vrabes is the dude or the guy.
The man.
The man. So it sounds like Elliot Wolf has lost control of a roster that he had last year, right?
Yeah, it does sound like that. Mm-hmm. We'll get to the phones here in just a minute. There's one quick thing I wanted to point out, which is kind of weird.
Uh-oh.
We were just talking about the Cranberries, right? Talking about the lead singer, whose name is Dolores O'Riordan. She died 7 years ago today.
Wow.
Isn't that weird?
Wow.
I brought her up out of nowhere. Like, we were talking about songs like with different messages and meanings and stuff like that that were very, very popular. And Zombie was a huge, I mean, it's a protest song, so it's different from Pumped Up Kicks, but it just popped into my head. She died 7 years ago today.
And her firstborn child was named Christian. Her second was Andy.
That'd be weird. That'd be weird. Those names aren't Irish
her
enough.
Her father's name was Lincoln, and her sister's name was Kennedy.
Was Kennedy, yeah. It's amazing. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We got Behind the Glass. We'll do a What If Wednesday coming your way in about 10 minutes. First, let's go to Rob. He is in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Rob.
How's it going, guys?
What's up?
So I'm just I'm a New England sports fan. Been a sports fan my whole life, and I'm just sitting here watching ESPN. They're talking about the coaching carousel, and about guys like Belichick, okay, 6-time Super Bowl winner, Mike Tomlin, and there's no room for these guys anymore. I'm just a little miffed by this.
Well, Mike Tomlin's on coaching a team in the NFL right now, so there's definitely room for him. Belichick, I don't know. Thanks for the call, Rob. I appreciate it. If Belichick was not at UNC, and I know he could still leave there, but let's just say he didn't go to UNC. He was waiting out the cycle, and he's a free agent right now and can be signed by any of these teams with coaching vacancies. Would he get hired?
Probably. Because I'm starting to feel like there's not enough good coaches to fill these vacancies. That's why I think you're going to start to see Marcus Freeman or some of these college names floated a little more strongly, or even your guy Dion, or more creative candidates. Because if Arthur Smith is becoming like a hot candidate,
right?
I'm not sure you have great candidates. And I do think Belichick...
Is Bill a great candidate? I mean,
no, he's not.
He's not, so.
He's not, but that's my point.
Right.
He would probably be atop the list of not great candidates, but he's Bill Belichick.
Yeah, he'd definitely get interviews this time
around. Yes.
Like, he didn't even get interviews last year. So I think he'd get interviews. I don't know if he'd get hired.
But, yeah, Mike Tomlin's still in the league. There were rumblings that he could get fired or traded. He shot those down immediately.
And Steelers fans are annoyed because he keeps, you know, it's a one and done. He's like the Bruins, right? I mean, they get one and done in the playoffs all these years. They have good regular seasons, but they haven't been able to get any better. And I don't think that's Mike Tomlin's fault at all, personally. But I can see why fans get frustrated. And, you know, you get frustrated, you look for a change.
And Bill's 73.
Right.
And was terrible at the end of his tenure here.
Mm-hmm.
So I would also argue... That's the way the world works. You age out, no matter your greatness. Like, the NBA ratings are down, and Michael Jordan's running a sneaker company. Is there no room for Michael Jordan in the NBA? Well, he's 107.
He is.
Just because he's a GOAT doesn't mean he can help you now or should compete for anything now, and I think it's the same with Belichick.
Yeah. Pete is in the car. Hey, Pete.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, Pete. What's up?
So I have a take on this invest comment, and I look at it this way, which is, free agency comes before the draft. They didn't know who they were going to have at quarterback. And what they could possibly have told Wolf was, hey, you can spend some, but you can't spend it all. Because if this doesn't work for us, this quarterback, we're going to have to blow it up and do it again or go buy a quarterback like the guy in Tampa Bay,
Baker Mayfield,
you know, off the free agency market. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, that to me is plausible. Like, don't go all in before we know if it's time to go all in buying free agents yet. That was my thought.
Fair enough, Pete. I kind of get what you're saying there, and I think there are teams that look at it that way. Who was it that said we're not in the right cycle to be making additions?
Gerard.
Was that Mayo?
For Amari Cooper?
Yeah, it was something
like that. When he went to Buffalo?
They said, how come you weren't in on Cooper while we're not in that cycle of our team? I think that's a real thing. I agree that it is. But that's no excuse not to get your rookie quarterback a wide receiver.
No.
I mean, come on. Like, you got to do something.
And I would argue the concern I'd have here... This should be piquing the ears of those of you that are worried that Jonathan, Robert, Robin, whoever,
right,
are injecting themselves in football. Because I was under the belief that Elliott Wolf was running the roster last year. So who was putting the limitations on him?
Good point, yeah.
It's Robert or Jonathan.
Jonathan.
Or, I mean, I guess, yeah, if you want to throw Robin, whatever. There's very few people, but this means, remember when I was asking all the meddling questions? Are they meddling owners? Or
Robin Glazier.
Bill, right? Like, yeah, say he sees it, but only a couple. I don't think Gerard Mayo was putting limitations on the investment that
he definitely wasn't. Okay. I mean, why would he? Yeah.
So in all likelihood, your name had to end in Kraft if you were limiting the investment,
mm-hmm,
that Elliott Wolf could make, right?
Well, it was not about finance. I don't know if you knew that.
I don't know. Well, Curran says it could be time. It could be whatever. It, mm-hmm, could be different things.
But it was also money. I mean, right, let's be honest here. They had the most cap space of any team in the league.
Correct.
For most of the year, too. You know, it wasn't just in the offseason. It was for most of the regular season. I think the Niners passed them somehow, which I don't know how they did that. They have a lot of money tied up. But the Patriots didn't spend and then were there with all that cap space. You can't take it with you, you know.
And
they were just there.
But I actually think the caller's theory could be okay if Elliott Wolf decided that.
Mm.
If Elliott Wolf said, you know what? I don't know if this quarterback is ready to win, so do I really need $90 million on Calvin Ridley? I'm actually okay with that if Elliott Wolf decides that. If Robert Kraft says, why don't you not spend as much money? Because we got some uncertainty. Like,
I think if Elliott Wolf decides that, it's also bad.
But
I don't like him deciding that either.
You're limiting the guy you've given the job to build your roster.
Right.
That's problematic.
Yeah, no,
that's really problematic. He can screw the job up, have bad philosophies, theories.
Because you can fire him.
Right.
Right, yeah.
But if you're limiting his ability to do his job, and doesn't that sound what Vrabel's saying?
Kind of, yeah.
Somebody limited Elliott Wolf's ability to build a roster. That's not good.
No, it's not. Tim in Hanover, go ahead.
All right, guys. Here's the deal. Vrabel and Tomlin both were like a few pieces away from maybe making a Super Bowl. We knew they were dead this year. They didn't have the parts and pieces, and that's the way they've been. I think Vrabel got his shot and said, I want three things on the table when he walked in there. My coaching career, if I take this job, is in jeopardy. If you don't let me kill the draft, buy the people that I got to get to put in place to have this a winning team, and then that way I can get forward and make it to the Super Bowl maybe within 2 or 3 years. I have to have all the parts and pieces. I will get the best offensive coordinator I can and take it from there, man.
Yeah, Tim, listen, I know that when he came in, he was talking about the things that he wanted, but it was about running the ball and playing defense and the trenches and sort of, you know, his philosophy on football. I don't know. I mean, yeah, he's obviously a big personality. He's obviously very assertive. He's going to tell them exactly what he wants when he wants it. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if the guys that are in the building right now are going to respond to that. You know, you start treating them like waiters, then, you know, it can be a divide. I don't know how great that is for the culture. We'll see. I also don't know how comfortable these guys are in the roles that they have right now either. That's another part of this.
I also wonder, because everyone has said now specifically Ryan Cowden,
yes,
works below Elliott Wolf.
Right.
But is Elliott just training Ryan Cowden to do his job and
maybe
then get escorted out?
It could certainly,
right,
be,
like,
the case, yeah.
You know, the systems, because Elliott supposedly kind of reconfigured the scouting system, did, mm-hmm, some things, and maybe the Crafts want to utilize some of that moving forward. So you need him to train Ryan Cowden, and then once he's fully trained, is Elliott Wolf going to be escorted out of town?
Yeah, could be. Russ in Warwick, you get the last word here. Go ahead, Russ.
Hey, guys. Nice,
hey,
to talk to you. I haven't called in a while, but anyway, I was just curious. Everybody seems to be talking about this comment of investing or not having the time to,
yes,
or not having the investment. It's not necessarily could mean that he didn't have the time to invest money. What about the time to invest his opinion? Maybe he was overruled on a lot of stuff that he decided he wanted to do, but was told, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah, that could be. I don't know who was overruling him, though. Like, who was overruling Elliott Wolf? It seems like Wolf was in charge.
Robert and Jonathan.
Right, but, I don't think they were getting in the weeds on who to draft, and right, maybe for May, but, I don't think after that, they were telling him, draft this guy, draft that guy. I think Wolf was in charge of all those things. I think he targeted the free agents. Maybe they gave him financial limitations, but do you think they were in the weeds like that? I mean, maybe
no,
for Ridley, because he was a big, you know, premier guy, but Gibson and Hooper and, you know, Brissett and everybody, I don't think they had anything to do with that.
My flip side of this is, sounds like Elliott Wolf did a really good job convincing Mike Vrabel there were reasons that the roster was so crappy.
Mm.
Like, he made excuses.
Yeah.
Whatever they were, maybe they were, excuses, reasons, whatever. But he convinced Mike Vrabel that there was a lot of stuff going. No. Chukwuma Okorafor, well, wait till you hear the story on him. You think I just signed him and assumed he could play left tackle? I wouldn't do that. Sounds like he sold him a pretty good bill of goods.
Yeah, it does sound that way.
Tom Curran yesterday here on Jones and Keefe. He makes his weekly appearance every Tommy Tuesday at high noon. Check it out on the Odyssey app if you want to hear the full thing. It's up on YouTube as well. Just subscribe to WEEI. He does acknowledge the cockroach is, surviving the coaching apocalypse there. He's going to survive. He's going to be here.
Mm.
He's not going to be out of a job after the draft, but he'll be here. But I am relieved that both Curran and Schefter yesterday said Vrabel's going to be the guy. Wolf is going to be here. He remains on, and I still have questions about that long term. But in the immediate future, Vrabel's going to get what he wants. Good. That's the way it should operate. That relieves some of the fears.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot to that job. This guy's been in the NFL for a long time. He's been in the organization for a while. Even though there are flaws and this last draft was less than ideal, they think there's enough that he can still do and then work with other guys. And last year, they certainly weren't going to trust Jerod Mayo to have final say, or probably even Matt Groh to have final say or whatever else. So they were kind of left with like, who's going to be the guy? And it ended up being him, where now it won't be. And I think that's fine.
And I think to your credit, you laid it out yesterday. Hey, Elliot, give us the top 200 receivers, and we're going to take your top 20, and I'm going to watch those guys.
Yeah.
And they're going to let him do some of the cursory work, and then I'm really going to drill down. Me and Ryan Cowden, his top executive, who's hiring away from the Giants, who used to work for him in Tennessee. It's the guy that Vrabel wanted as the GM in Tennessee when he was feuding with ownership and other personnel people. We're going to whittle down and really focus on these top 20 guys and find out what we want. And they'll do that at every position.
Yeah.
That to me makes a lot of sense.
My hope is, take last year for an example, and they say, all right, got the quarterback, good. Here's the wide receivers. Here's Keon Coleman. Here's Ladd McConkey. Here's Jalen Polk. Here's Javon Baker. Here's A.D. Mitchell. Now it's up to you. Wolf might say, I kind of like Polk. And you're like, all right, great. you're like, so then Vrabel, and maybe the guy that he brings in with him, who he trusts even more, maybe they really go over the tape and the combine and whatever else, talk to coaches, and they look at those five guys. And my hope is Vrabel identifies Ladd McConkey, or really any of the guys other than Polk, being better than Polk.
Right.
And then if they hit or miss on the 35th pick in the draft, it's on Vrabel.
So here's what I'm now going to start saying. If they screw up another receiver, I'm not going to blame Wolf for it, right?
Yeah, no.
Like, I mean, I'm now convinced enough hearing Schefter and Curran with us yesterday. If they screw up on another second-round receiver, and he's got the whiff of Tyquan Thornton and the whiff of Jalen Polk to him already, I'm going to blame Vrabel for that.
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
And Cowden, I'm now there. I'm not going to blame Wolf for that unless I hear something different between now and then. So hopefully there is a different approach, and hopefully they're more likely to, land guys who can actually play. By the way, I meant to read this last segment. I got caught up in the maycation there and the criticism for Drake May.
What do you got?
There is an update in Vegas. Vincent Bonsignore.
Nice.
Very plugged in guy with the Raiders. Mm-hmm. He says a lot of momentum is building for Ben Johnson and the Raiders.
Makes sense. I mentioned that when we were doing our rip through.
You did.
I thought if Tom Brady may have wanted Mike Vrabel, maybe he didn't, whatever, we drew that line. But once you cross him off the list, wouldn't that be an obvious one for Tom Brady? Tom Brady's done a few Lions games this year. He's been pretty complimentary of Ben Johnson. He might even do the Super Bowl with Ben Johnson, which I feel like would be a conflict of interest.
Very strange.
And then all that
he's,
stuff.
He's doing the game, as you said, this week. And yeah. Right, he could be doing a lot of Lions games.
It makes a ton of sense to me. You probably aren't going to get a stud quarterback this year if you're the Vegas Raiders. I mean, you could trade up, but I don't even know if that's a guaranteed stud. I would just look at what Ben Johnson has done for Jared Goff and say, all right, if we get a guy that's even somewhat decent, can Ben Johnson kind of, get the most out of him?
What does it tell you? Because I think when we ranked these earlier, we ranked them inadvertently. I'm not sure we ever said 1-6, but I think we agree on the order of the rankings. We both had... No,
Bears.
You had Chicago 1, I had Dallas 1.
Bears,
so
Dallas.
So actually our 1 and 2 were flipped. We both had the Raiders 3.
Yep.
I think followed by, in this order... Jacksonville, Saints, Jets, I think.
Yeah, you can flip Saints and Jets. Well, it doesn't matter. But Jets last.
He's taking the, I guess, number 4 job, because I think the Patriots is a better job than Vegas. He's taking the 4th best job on the board. interesting. I guess it speaks to the power of Brady, right?
Power of Brady, maybe power of money. Who knows if they throw the most money at him?
That, too. I don't know. Mark Davis is not the wealthiest owner.
Yeah.
But he's the most willing to throw the cash around, that's for sure.
I don't know.
He's paying three coaches, or he will, have, in very short order, be paying three coaches. Four coaches.
It's too many coaches.
Is he still paying Gruden?
Probably.
That was a 10-year deal, so yeah.
They could rehire Gruden.
Gruden?
Keep him on the same salary.
Gruden, McDaniels, Pierce, and now whoever the new guy. I mean, that guy's... no wonder the guy has no money. He's spending it all on coaches.
And the GM, because they canned Telesco. And Ziegler.
It's a mess.
So they're paying like four for offices.
But Brady's the new personnel guy. So I don't think they need to pay
coming
one of those.
In. They're going to figure that out. Yeah, I mean... It's still like a good job, but he could still take Chicago. I think it's just that means the Raiders are super interested. I don't know if that tweet tells you that Ben Johnson's super interested.
Oh, hang on. Didn't it say, let me reread it.
It just says like heating up, but that might be the Raiders' interest, no?
A lot of momentum building for Ben Johnson and the Raiders. Like to me, that means they're moving towards a deal is the implication.
They're in cahoots. Yes. That's what you're saying.
That's all right. That's how I read it. Look, I don't read everything right.
Maybe.
But that's how I read it.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Do you think he would have any pause at all about leaving Detroit and going to Chicago? You know, like when Eric Mangini went to the Jets, that was sort of like the death blow. It's like, hey, you took a bunch of coaches and you stayed in the division. Like, don't do that. Like, they're kind of mad about that. Or is it just maybe the Jets?
I mean, maybe it's somewhere. I would imagine it's way down his list.
Yeah, he interviewed with them, so it's not like it's the end of the world if he goes there, but I just wonder if. Is that a tiebreaker at all? Maybe not. You know, get out of the division, get out of the conference even. Like, good luck to you guys, Detroit. I'll see you later.
Do you think, maybe we should have talked about this more when we were considering Ben Johnson as a candidate. Do you think he has a different perspective than a lot of these coaches on, he might not think he needs a top flight quarterback. He just made it work with Jared Goff.
Yeah.
And so,
but I don't think you want Aiden O'Connell either.
No. But I don't think they'll have, you know, Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew. Yeah. I don't think they're going to have that. I think, did Ritter make some starts for them this year, too?
Oof.
But,
well, doesn't it come down to, if you're Ben Johnson, what do you see in Caleb Williams? He's a very polarizing player. Maybe he, not publicly, is like, he doesn't have it. Then no, you stay away from there. But if you're like, oh yeah, this guy's good,
so
then that makes up your mind.
Maybe a guy like Ben Johnson is more open to the idea of the Raiders, or maybe it's simple. They're just willing to give him the most money, and he wants to, people want to work with Brady. I don't think he's the only one. But that is interesting, because that's not the best job. No, I definitely don't think it's a better job than the Patriots, and it's not better, in my estimation, than the Bears or Cowboys. So it's interesting he's going there.
The Cowboys one's weird, just because they're competitive every year, but they're like not where they, I mean, this year they weren't, but most years they're close, but they're not close enough.
You're under a microscope.
Yeah.
You know, you're chasing. Well, yeah, Jerry Jones will be patient with you. You brought this up. Jerry Jones is not going to run you off after a year because he doesn't want to pay you.
No.
And so you're going to see your 4 or 5 year deal, whatever you sign, you're going to be there for 4 or 5 years, but you're under a microscope. There is a lot of pressure. There's not pressure in all these jobs. Vrabel said this yesterday, right? It's a performance business.
Well,
you have to go out there and perform.
The other five jobs, the goal is to make the playoffs. That job is win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, they all should want. That's the goal for everybody. But I'm just saying, like, if you take the Jaguars or the Saints or the Jets to the playoffs, they're going to be like, you did a great job.
You go to Vegas, win 10 games, and lose on wild card weekend, it's a great year.
You're the man.
You go to Dallas, you win 12 games. And, you know, you lose on the divisional round.
You should be fired.
I mean, that's what people are going to say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what people were saying about Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy won 12 games in 3 straight years in Dallas.
How about him getting one
of
these jobs?
And he was getting fired like every... I don't get that.
He might just go right to Chicago?
I didn't get Dallas keeping him. I got that more than I get New Orleans and Chicago lining up for him. I don't get that at all.
No, it's odd. And there's definitely going to be a surprise coach out of nowhere that gets one of these jobs too. Because like Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, even if you want to throw in Mike McCarthy, all right, that's 3.
Is Deion a surprise, or do you not even count that as a surprise?
It would. Yeah, if he was the Cowboys head coach, that like... upsets the list of other candidates, you know, but like, is Liam Cohen or Cliff Kingsbury?
Do some of those teams wait for Marcus Freeman?
Maybe.
Do any of the teams call about O'Connell?
Well, yeah. Oh, like a trade. Well, Tomlin shot down the Steelers, anything with the Steelers. Like,
he said it's a waste of time.
Yeah, waste your time. Kevin O'Connell might get a little sniff. Might call
Glazer.
Call
Glazer said multiple teams.
But then even still, that opens up an opening there. And then it's like, all right, maybe they just promote Flores or...
Good point.
Yeah, who knows?
Good point. 617-779-7937. So an interesting update to the coaching carousel. Ben Johnson interviewed here. They obviously went with Vrabel. Tom Brady hiring in Vegas. So we'll keep our eyes on that. Meanwhile, where are you starting when you're rebuilding this thing for Drake May? And we talked about the offensive coordinator and who's the best fit for Drake May, who's the ideal candidate. Where are you starting? You're still starting receiver?
I am. I know everybody's screaming right now, line, look at the line. The line's horrible. But let me introduce you to the horrible receivers that they also had. Guys that committed penalties themselves, just like the offensive line, ran the wrong routes, which led to interceptions, at times would catch a pass and hand it to the defensive player. It happened on multiple occasions. So they weren't making plays for Drake May at all. They were making his job way more difficult. Touche, same with the offensive line. They made his job more difficult too. But I think you need to prioritize a high-end receiver. You need to upgrade both spots, clearly. But if I had, say you're like, you can only spend like a $25 million player on one or the other, I would take the receiver.
Who was your receiver? When we came up with our 60-second plan and you put us on the clock, which I think...
So my original plan was...
Who was your receiver?
T. Higgins and Higgins. Travis Hunter.
Right.
It was draft and sign.
Right.
Now I'm A.J. Brown. Now I'm all in on A.J. Brown.
Because of what Vrabel said yesterday?
Yeah, and I just think there's more smoke to the maybe get out of Philly thing. Like, he's under contract. They're good. But especially if they lose the Super Bowl, or I'm sorry, don't win the Super Bowl, maybe they consider making some changes. Wide receivers get hot and cold in all these places. He and Vrabel love each other. Vrabel's three best years were with A.J. Brown in Tennessee.
And a huge reason why Vrabel
ultimately
in Tennessee was the feuding with John Robinson over trading A.J. Brown.
So if you could get A.J. Brown in here, it also opens up the door to whatever you want. You could take Abdul Carter with the fourth pick if you want. You got A.J. Brown, then you're going to have to spend some money in free agency, probably your second or other picks on linemen. But, yeah, A.J. Brown would be my priority now.
I'm with you on wide receiver. And although I don't love the outside guy, my name at the time was D.K. Metcalf.
Mm-hmm.
And he's definitely an outside guy. A.J. Brown can move around the formation and is a massive after-the-catch guy, but he is traditionally an outside guy. I'd take any one of them. What I really... truly want, just to use the Lions analogy, what I really want for Drake May is their Amon-Ra St. Brown. That style of receiver, more middle of the field, more you can't cover, you can't throw double coverage his way, you know, shadow A.J. Brown on the outside of the formation or D.K. Metcalf outside the formation, a guy who you can line up anywhere, a guy who can get open middle of the field, outside of the field, run after the catch guy. Amon-Ra St. Brown is all those things. I'm not saying you're going to get him, but I want the closest thing to that for Drake May. And I'd like a middle-of-the-field player. It's why I didn't shoot down the idea about drafting a tight end highly, which I know isn't their biggest need.
Right.
But I like a middle-of-the-field player for Drake May and a security blanket, if you will. The A.J. Brown stuff is interesting, though, because, well, Curran was all about A.J. Brown last offseason. All about it. And then things kind of got smoothed over. You had the Brandon Graham, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Report.
He and Hurts don't like each other.
Yeah. He went on radio in Philly, WIP, sister station down there. And he goes, yeah, they used to be best friends and now they're not.
That can't happen.
That sounds familiar.
That's
Keith.
Never happened
it
before.
It does. And then you got A.J. Brown sitting there reading a book while getting, I think three targets.
Yeah, people love that book. It's like a self-help book. Now it's like the number one seller.
It skyrocketed to number one bestseller.
Yeah.
So I think he got three targets in that game, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was the final number.
Yeah, it wasn't much.
One catch, three targets, something like that, and he's reading a book.
They did win.
They did, but the context is important. It's not like he was getting 10 targets and reading a book. He's getting three targets. And the backdrop of their teammates saying, well, those guys used to be best friends, and now they're not. A.J. Brown, a very interesting name.
Yeah.
I like T. Higgins. I'm almost more into the idea of trading for one of these guys. You have some extra draft capital.
Oh, he's better. Brown's better than Higgins. So
Brown
I'm
is absolutely better. Yeah. I think DK's better. Maybe that one's closer.
Mm-hmm.
I still like Deebo Samuel, and I can't get out of my head something that Vrabel said yesterday where it's like, we want guys who are hard to tackle.
So you basically just want guys that were drafted right after N'Keal Harry.
Anybody you could have had a few years ago
that's
is
literally
that's my
list.
That's a good list. Isn't that a good list?
It's a great list.
It's a good place to start.
Unfortunately, it's an incredible list.
I'm with you. It's wide receiver before O-line. That doesn't mean you can't get both. You should get both.
No, you need both. The other thing I think, not to make excuses, because Elliot Wolf did a really horrible job at signing offensive linemen and developing anything up front. They did have a million injuries. Again, excuses, whatever.
Yeah.
But they had like 15 combinations on their offensive line. They had like 15 different starting lineups or some insane number, right? Like David Andrews got hurt. You had some other injuries. And the performance was what it was. Whereas the wide receivers, that was pretty much the group from tip to tail. And they were horrible the whole time.
They never changed it. They
you know, like Booty had a couple flashes where you're like, oh, nice for my Booty.
They'd alternate their healthy scratch every week.
No, but that was their guys.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, we're waiting for so-and-so to come back.
Nope.
Like, oh, tough blow because this guy's out for the year. Or
nope.
He's on IR. That was the group. So that's it's in more need of an upgrade.
A few bits of feedback here. Twitch chat, Clapton fan, says Deontay Johnson, he needs a book.
Listen, I like receivers. I understand a lot of them are crazy. This guy, was he on four teams this year?
Three, I think. He started in Carolina.
I think four in the calendar year.
Yeah, because he was he was on Pittsburgh last year.
Like,
so
on,
Carolina
man.
Went to the Ravens. They're like, we don't want this guy. The Texans just waved him in the middle of, after a win, after
they
a playoff win.
They're playing this weekend. They're like, and you're they done, son. I can't.
And in fairness to the Twitch chat, he wasn't making a case for Deontay Johnson. He says he needs a book to read during the game.
Book. Yeah, he does.
But I had advocated for Deontay Johnson in the past.
I can't now.
I'm not looking down my nose at talent, but that's a tough one to sell. Another name we haven't brought up, Wiggy stumped for him before, Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
I know the reports now are that things are smoothed over in Miami. I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Tyreek Hill in or out?
I mean, I'd be in. He's like a piece of crap guy.
Oh, terrible guy.
Terrible guy, but I'd take him.
Terrible guy, but yeah. Can he get open?
Oh, he can make Drake May look pretty good, I think.
Okay, I'm in. And I'll just still call him a terrible guy when he's a Patriot.
Yep. I'm not going to buy his jersey, but no. I'll root for the points.
It's just like I'll call him a terrible guy when he was the Chiefs and the Dolphins, and he'll be a terrible guy here.
Yeah.
But he'll also get, 1,500 yards and 10 touchdowns. Great.
Yeah.
Because we brought up that report out of Philly, Keith.
Yes.
I do want to replay one bit of audio we played earlier today.
Please.
Because, in your face, the Bruins are all motivated and fired up.
They're mad.
Major league style at you. You sparked.
Well, they're winning, so we'll take that.
You sparked a whole thing with the Bruins last night, Keith. In fact, Pastrnak even got an assist on a Marchand goal. They were on the ice at the same time last night. I think Marchand looked off Pastrnak on that goal. Pastrnak was diving to the front of the net. Marchand didn't look his way. He sniped home a beautiful goal. My guy, Marchand.
He did. Good
player. Wasn't much of a celebration after the goal between the two of them.
Huh.
They kind of bumped mitts there. That's how you refer to gloves and hockey mitts.
Mitts. Yeah, they bumped mitts a little bit.
Yeah, is what they did.
Got their mittens.
Got their twigs out of the way and bumped mitts.
Good.
Pastrnak led the way in scoring last night. It was a goal and two assists, 3 points.
Second star of the game.
He was the number two star. Yeah. Thank you, Keith. Yeah. You would think Brad Marchand would bring up his best bud after the game, right? You would think.
Well, he was interviewed after the game, yeah.
Yeah. Good question by Razor, who I'm looking forward to talking to tomorrow on a Bruins Thursday.
Should be good.
Here's what Marchand had to say about the win.
Brad, huge game from Jeremy Swayman. Huge game from a bunch of guys stepping up. Huge games from the forwards, leadership. That was a good one.
Yeah. I thought we had a really good start. There's some periods of the game where we kind of let them take the momentum back. But ultimately, we got the job done at this time of year. That's all that matters. And some things we can be happy about and continue to build on. Some things we can improve. So, but an incredible game by Sway. I thought Weatherspoon had an incredible game as well. He was great out there all night. And obviously Callahan and Vinny and Potsy were big additions to the group tonight, but brought lots of energy, so it was good.
Okay, you counted five?
Five guys.
Because we don't want to misspeak. We don't want to be accused of
making things
up. Get
yourself a nice double cheeseburger there. Talk about five guys. Not bad.
Okay. Yeah, maybe it's nothing, but I don't know, Pastrnak, second star, high score in the game.
Had a great game.
I would bring up my best bud.
Your best bud?
That's what I would do.
Yeah, listen, everybody's a little bit different, I guess.
I also would, give a big celebration and maybe not look him off when he's diving to the net. But that happens,
I guess.
That's just me.
Right.
Bruins have won two in a row. He did bring up Swayman was awesome and has been awesome these last two games. So you hope that's righting the ship. But I'll say this again. The Bruins not exactly self-motivators.
No.
The two times they've been waking up this year was when they fired Monty and when Keith got Marchand all hot and bothered the other day.
They're 2-0 after pound sand.
Other than that much. Not much. 617-779-7937. A reminder, all of our coverage here of football's postseason on WEEI is brought to you by Wise Snacks. No one does crunchy, salty, or cheesy better than Wise Snacks.
I'm being accused on the text line of bee-washing Drake May, and I'm often accused of that, so it doesn't bother me. But Texter says, why are you acting like it doesn't matter if the leader of a team does not show up to welcome the head coach of the football? I do not get this argument.
Yeah.
It's driving
captains were there.
I feel like the guy had an unbelievable rookie season,
mm-hmm.
and people are scurrying around
trying to find something to drag him on.
Yeah, see, like, that didn't bother me.
What is that mentality?
No, like, that didn't bother me. He wasn't there because they had been gone for, a while now.
Did Mike Vrabel find out that he was getting the job? Theoretically. I mean, I'm sure.
Probably over the weekend or whatever it was.
Like, it was official. Yeah. They got their deal done. I mean, he interviewed on Thursday.
But Greg, can you both be true? It's not a big deal that he wasn't there. I don't think long term this matters at all. If he was there, it would have been good. Both can be true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it did bother me that he wasn't there for the players' exit interviews with the media after Mayo got fired. Because we knew Mayo got fired, Sunday after the game?
Yes. Yeah, like an hour after the game.
And it did bother me that he dipped out the back door without, basically saying, hey, listen.
Dipped out the back door. He wasn't told he had to stay. I think he walked out, just like a lot of the other
but
players.
Courtney, if they had a meeting on Monday. They probably had a team meeting on Monday. And in that team meeting, whoever it was, the interim head coach said, hey, listen, the media's in the locker room. They're probably going to want to ask questions about Mayo and all that other stuff.
And probably said, you're not required to stay.
Yeah, you're not required to stay. Right. I agree with you. But as the face of the franchise, he made it a point where he was going to exit stage left. And we weren't going to at least get his input. When you're the face of the franchise, like if Jalen Polk goes stage left, nobody gives an F. If, Christian Barmore or whoever. But when you're the quarterback, after that, you could just be like.
But do you expect, giving a pass to somebody who is in this role for the first time ever in the NFL as a starting quarterback and the face of a franchise? Do you expect that they're going to develop that rapidly as a leader?
But I do expect that they know the do's and don'ts, the common sense do's and don'ts of being the face of a franchise.
Oh, my gosh. He didn't do anything wrong, though. And then he's looking at other players that decided to stay and then got ripped for staying for the way that in which they smiled. Christian Gonzalez, it was like, oh, he hated Jerod Mayo. He's smiling during the whole thing.
But you got to know the do's and don'ts, Courtney. They're smart enough now because he's been a leader for a long time, right? He's probably was a leader in his high school. He was a leader at UNC.
Being a leader at UNC is far different than leader in the NFL.
But you know the do's and don'ts when you're the face of a franchise because people are always probably, Stacy's always putting it in his ear. I'm willing to bet you, hey, this is what people are going to think. This is what people are going to say. Here's what you need to do. The do's and don'ts. And so when you look at it, is it a big deal at the end of the day? No. But is it a bad look? Yes.
I don't think the fans think it's a bad look at all.
Many people criticizing
You only heard about people criticizing the media.
We had a whole conversation.
I don't think fans give an F. Yeah. I really don't. I don't think.
Do you think Christian Gonzalez cares that he did it?
Yeah, I think so after.
Right. So he's standing there going, I'm getting railroaded for smiling, and the quarterback of this team left and flew home.
I think he's saying you made the right decision.
But you,
I don't.
You're talking on both sides of your mouth. You're saying, because you said fans don't care, but then you said you saw all over social media.
No,
all over social media fans complaining.
No, she's saying it's from media.
Let me finish. You're saying all over social media fans were complaining that Drake May wasn't at the
Vrabel. No, she said the social media was complaining.
He wasn't at Vrabel's press conference.
Yeah, it was a conversation that was started because media made a point.
No. But didn't you say you saw a ton of it on social media of people complaining on why? It was even your lead why people are complaining Drake May wasn't
there. My lead was about the media.
No, that was about him leaving for the exit meeting. I'm talking about.
I never had a lead about him not being at Vrabel's press conference.
So you didn't talk about him not being a.
I said it was ridiculous that people cared.
Right. So
I never specified that it was fans. It was all the media that is making this into a bigger thing than it actually is. And it's frustrating to me because he is one of the only bright spots for New England moving forward. Now we've got Mike Vrabel, so obviously there is more to it. But Drake May, we should be making sure he is so freaking happy here in New England. So happy.
The media should be making sure that Drake May is happy?
The media shouldn't be going out of their way to criticize the only person that kept us in games this season.
Well, the media is just pointing out a guy that decided not to be there. It's not the end of the world. Nobody's saying get rid of him.
Curtis loves the media when it's with his narrative. So let me ask this question.
If he shows up...
What is the narrative?
Your narrative is that you didn't like that he didn't show up, which is fine.
I said I don't give a damn, but I understand those that would be... If you're going to...
It seems like you give a damn. Because you brought it up a few times.
If you're going to say it was not... I said legitimately 5 minutes ago... Not a big deal he wasn't there.
That we would have
if he came back from a vacation and went to that press conference, damn right we would have praised him.
I agree with this texter who says absolutely no issue with him dipping. It's not his mess to clean up.
Yep.
But it's not about mess. It's about when you're in sports, it's not always about mess. It's not always about is it the right thing to do. It comes down to two things. Is it a good look? Versus, is it a bad look? And not that he's a bad kid for not showing up, but it's all about perception. And in my opinion, it's a bad look for him not speaking after the male firing when you are the face of the franchise. And
if you and Mrs. Wiggins were booked into the honeymoon suite in Grand Cayman,
right?
And suddenly I was unceremoniously fired, would you come back?
No, but you're missing.
Wiggy's show would start Tuesday.
I don't.
You two would be in the hot tub. You'd be sitting on the Jets.
I'm not tripping about him being at Vrabel's introduction. I'm talking about here's the issue, Greg. If I was on the show with you, right, and then an hour after we get off the show, or 30 minutes after we get off the show, they call us in a meeting and say
you wouldn't be here. Well, you're not here 5 minutes after all right, the show.
So let's say 2 minutes after the show, they call a meeting and say, oh, we're moving on from Greg. Hey, but you don't have to answer any questions, but there are media people out there.
You would be in your car the second.
It's a good look.
Oh, Wiggy.
Because you know why, Courtney? If I'm in my car, then people are going to be like, oh, he must have didn't like Greg. Yeah. I mean, it's all about look.
I guess you do run the risk that people are doing what they do and speculating about why you weren't there.
Let them speculate that you didn't like the coach that just got fired.
Right.
He got fired for a reason.
That's what it is.
But it's perception, man. That's what you guys got to understand. Perception. People's perception of you might not be the reality, but if you stage left and you know that your head coach had just gotten fired and you're the franchise quarterback and you've said nothing but great things about him, but then you don't say nothing after
credit,
the game?
Credit to Drake May not caring about his perception has of him.
How do you think Mayo feels?
I don't think Mayo gives a damn.
Oh, I bet he does.
I bet he does not care at all. I'm sure Drake May had plenty of conversations behind closed doors.
His guy won't defend him?
What is there to...
And say, hey, listen.
He doesn't have a job anymore. There's nothing to defend.
He lost the job.
He was a great coach. I feel bad for him.
He was a great collaborator.
Or whatever. He was a great collaborator. Or just
great
show...
Guy.
Show a little bit of like...
Great interview.
Show a little bit of like remorse. Like, hey... Mayo was a great guy. Wow. I understand.
Remorse.
Yeah. It's a bad look.
Oh, my gosh. I just.
Well, that's what. You know what? What's the saying, Greg? The person who wears the crown.
The apple never falls far from the tree.
Nope.
Heavy is the head that wears the crown.
Right. So when you're the face of the franchise, these are just some of the things that you have to do.
Well, not a big deal to me, but I'm glad. You and I disagree a little bit.